Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. I'm Susan Dobie Chase, and today I'm thrilled to bring you the work of Atlanta's famous Cola Rum. Hi, Cola. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I look so forward to talking to you about all the things that are going on in your life. I know that you've got some big writing projects going on, but how have you been?
I've been good, man. I've just been living my life, and like I say, I'm coming to an end of a journey. I've been writing a double novel for like 8 years, so the first book is finished, and it just has to be copy edited, and so the second one will be finished by the summer, and so both of them will just have to be copy edited, but it's been an 8-year journey. But it was well worth it. It was the most rewarding thing. I tell everybody it was the hardest thing I've done, but it was the most rewarding same time.
So 8 years ago, you had somebody sign you to do a book, or did you write the book first and then try to find somebody to back you?
Yeah, I'm writing it first, and then in this day and time, 2017, before you even find somebody to back you, I think you should put it out for yourself first, and then generate your power by yourself first. You know, then so that's how I'm doing it. Yeah, so that's how I'm doing it. So I just got inspiration. I was doing poetry, around the country, and I was doing car escort to supplement my income, and then I was riding in the car between like New Mexico late at night in the dark. And I said, you know, it's time to write some books. I just thought it's time to write some books. And so, I had been thinking about it. I read this thing about Dumas, who wrote Three Musketeers. He read his books when he got real old. He read his books. And when he reread his books when he was real old, he would sit up there and he was laughing at his own books and was like, these are some good books. And I was like, wow, that'd be a dope way to live my life when I'm an old man. If I lived as an old man, sitting back and reading your own book and then being entertained by it. So that, it determined, I said, okay. Then I just figured out the topic I wanted to talk about. And then I came back into Atlanta, got off the road, sacrificed, and said, you know what? Let me get me a security job at night and just bang it out. And so that's what I've been doing, banging it out.
Lovely, lovely. And I love that you found employment that allows you to write. That's perfect, absolutely perfect. I think that many writers get thrown off because, you know, they try to do everything, all at once, and it's so overwhelming to have a full-time job and try to write and try to, have a family and try to, just fall by the wayside sometimes.
Yeah, you got to find a job where your mind is free. If you're going to write, you got to find a job where your mind is free, where your mind is not occupied. So, security is one of those jobs, security or librarian or something. Well, your mind can, you can have a lot of time to be thinking about stuff. So I was just fortunate to find one of those.
And then how long into the first one did you start writing the second one? Were you writing them both simultaneously?
Well, they're a double novel, so both of them are basically one story. It is just that once you start writing, the story just grows. And so just following the lead, a lot of people who have, like, say, in the Game of Thrones is one story, but it's like, what, 10 books. He already completed 6 books. He's got 4 more books to complete. but it's one story. So it's just basically,
yeah.
I had a story in my head, but once I started writing, I realized it's too big for one book. So I just said, I'm keep writing the story. So once I said, okay, I kept writing the story, I said, okay, this is a book right here. And I see, I realized how far the story had to go. I said, okay, this is going to be the second book. So I just kept writing and writing. So, yeah, it's two books.
Awesome. That's so cool. And I want to talk more about the characters and the story and the whole thing. I really do, because it really interests me. But if you wouldn't mind, I was wondering if I could prevail upon you to read us something.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'll read you one. This one is called Sticky Conversation, and it's a wild poem about, I'll let you understand what I'm about to read.
Hey, Cola?
No. Yes.
Cola? I don't know what's going on with the sound, but we're getting you cut in and out a little bit.
Oh, okay. Well,
I was wondering if you could start the poem over again.
Okay. Humans action by far let your people they are. Therefore, it's always amusing to see the protruding bumper stickers on people's cars, especially if it's religious, because the fittest apostles, they jostle the will for the right to show their holy zeal. Just like their Sunday sessions, they take that bumper sticker without question and they slap it on their automobiles. So when I'm discovered on the highway, while I'm in my brother's hoopty Chevrolet, I feel it's my right to scathe them and debate them. Well, you're damn right, I'm going to chase them. Hey, I ain't hating. If they didn't want an altercation, they shouldn't have sent out an invitation. The moment they decided to share with the world one of their pearls of salvation was the day they asked to be barraged by a shitty discharge from one of God's uptight sight patients. One night, a white guy passed by on a motorbike, bobbing his head with delight. His hot rod was dipped in beige and white. He had a stick in clear sight on the rear of the bike, and the seal said, God is always right. Joyful tears, joyful tears, get the fuck out of here. I pulled up beside him, then I eyed him as he slowly looked my way. Then I gave this fool's man a few lines from the holy book that my life had made. I said, thou shalt know that God is dual life. There'll always be a wrong side of right. God maketh mistakes, but religion is draped over thy face so thy eyes can't see this sight. Thou shalt, God is always right. Well, player, go tell that shit to a bitch born with a pussy and a dick, a hermaphrodite. Then I smashed out laughing about the hoopty Chevrolet. That fool said never cleared his thoughts or his mind and give him trouble today. Hey, I'm not hating. If he didn't want an altercation, he shouldn't have sent out an invitation. There was a bougie female in a tea-colored tercel, dying to get to heaven by driving like she just left hell, compelled to exude fake rebel cool while puffing on a camel. Her dear Jesus was kindled on the adhesive on her rib window that rambled, God won't give you nothing that you can't handle. Joyful tears, get the fuck out of here. I put up beside her, then I eyed her as she slowly looked my way. Then I gave her cool man a few lines from the holy book that my life had made. I said, some trees breaketh when the wind scrambles. Anomalies maketh the righteous gamble. Minds are left in shambles when the feet of ill fortune start to trample. Thou said, God won't give you nothing that you can't handle. Well, tell that to a man at a cloth who blew his fucking head off over a sex scandal. Then I smashed out laughing about the hoopty Chevrolet. That fool said never played our thoughts on mine and give her trouble today. Hey, I ain't hating. If she didn't want an altercation, she shouldn't have sent out an invitation. A dude cruised by in a fly bin buggy. He was rocking a pork pie and a rugby. From my sight, he was laid back, you know, playing like quite smugly. He had a sticker placed in the car's way so subtly, but the pill was still drudgery because the seal revealed, God don't like ugly. Joyful tears, get the fuck out of here. I put up beside him, then I eyed him as he slowly looked my way. Then I gave his well-to-do mind a few lines from the holy book that my life had made. I said, thou can deny the violence that infests this grid, hate, oppression, and molested kids. But God married Mother Earth's unattractive ass, or something about her that he really digs. Thou said, God don't like ugly. Shit. And I smashed out laughing about the hoopty Chevrolet. That fool sitting up clear, thoughts of mine will get in trouble today. Then he got behind me, doing 90, and a brand new Mercedes Benz. The wrath of a fool was purposely my thoughts. His mind was in Hades. Then he put up beside me, then he eyed me as I slowly looked his way. Then he gave my rude mind a few lines from the holy book that his life had made. He said, hey, I'm blood. I'm not in denial that Earth's beauty is hard to stockpile, goddammit. But beauty is the only thing worthwhile that makes me smile on this rotten planet. I stay drunk off this model while I wallow in his own. But life is a blind date with bits and a beer. Yeah, I'm prone to keep my big augers on because I ain't trying to see how ugly the bitch is. Puck up your lips for drivers and truckers and get used to giving a lot of blowjobs, brother, for your assumptions will turn your ass into an all-day sucker. I am a wheel tech and tire lovers. I'm test driving this car, checking the traction of the rubber. I didn't even know it was a bumper sticker on this motherfucker. Then he smashed out, laughing about in a brand new Mercedes Benz, leaving me and my hoopty to play with my thoughts with just God's little revenge. The end.
Well, that's an interesting poem. I really like it a lot. Where did that come from for you? I mean, where did that begin?
It began whenever I would get in cars and I'd be driving on the expressway. It's funny how Americans are so, we are egomaniacs in a way, and you really, really see that when you're on the highway and you see people bumper stickers. And they just have some of the stuff on their phone. Yeah, just my child makes straight A's. I was like, who the fuck cares? You know, God is behind the wheel. I'm like, this is some American shit. We so fucking egomaniacal that we got to put a bumper sticker on our fucking cars, letting everybody know who we are. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so everybody riding around on this bus with their fucking mental mantra on their goddamn car. And so that's what made me write it, because I'm like, God damn, we some arrogant bastards in America, you know? I say, look how arrogant. We put our bumper, you know, on the car, the bumper sticker in the window, you know, that God is behind the wheel, the Son of God. Shit, all of us, God in all of us, we alive. But it basically shows you, the American mind state. You know, you really, really see the American mind state when you're on the highway and you see the bumper stickers. So that was my inspiration for that poem.
Okay, so truthfully, have you ever had a bumper sticker on your car?
No, I never. I only own one car in my life. Yeah, I only own one car in my life. Yeah. So no.
If you
had to have a bumper sticker. Nah, I wouldn't help her. If I had help on people, fuck y'all and y'all bumper stickers. That's what it would say on the bumper sticker.
Right. It would be anti-bumper sticker, bumper sticker.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck y'all and y'all bumper stickers.
It's actually kind of a cool idea to have something that, like, is what it is, but also says more, like a poet's always trying to do, but that would be kind of funny.
Yeah, that would be real funny.
I've got my mind going all these different directions because I want to talk about the books that you were talking about, but I also want to talk about this poem. I think I want to give you the choice of which direction we go in next because I think that we're going to end up with so much to say that we're going to, you know, hit time limits and stuff. Would you rather go back and talk about the books more, or you want to talk about the poetry?
We can talk about the books, but the poetry is speaking for itself.
Okay.
So we can talk about, we can talk about
amen.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
sounds
poets
good.
Need to hear it. Yeah, poets need to hear it, especially poets who are about to write novels or young poets thinking about getting a novel. They need to hear what we're talking about. So,
absolutely.
Or poets who are writing novels right now, making that jump, so they need to hear it. So,
yeah,
we can go back and talk about the book.
Exactly. I think that's a great choice. Okay, so, you know, you're a poet and you're writing this novel, and what things are the easiest for you? What things are the hardest for you?
For a poet, the dialogue and the words are the easiest. Because you being a poet, you're always concentrated on dialogue. You're always concentrated on words. So every chapter that I wrote, the dialogue comes out simple to the point that that's what I started doing first. I would just write all the dialogue for a chapter. Then after I write the dialogue, then I fill in everything else. So the dialogue and the words come in easy because you already know what sounds good. You already know what feels good. So it's just like a painter painting. You know how to put words, you know how to move word over here, move this word over here. You're instinctually, since you've been a poet and you've been doing it for a while, you already instinctually know where a word is supposed to go, and you already know dialogue. The hardest thing is the detailing and the continuity, because being poets, we don't have to have any continuity. We don't have to have any detailing. We don't have to be real, real disciplined in our structures. But when you're writing a novel, those different structures and streams are very, very important, and you can forget them in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, if a person got a person drinking some tea with a blue shirt on, and two chapters down, the person don't have on a shirt and they drinking water. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, what happened to the damn tea?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know? So that's the hardest part.
Well, and I would imagine, too, that as a poet, you try to tell a story, you know, take that picture and have it fit into, you know, the way you were talking about it being like a painting, into that one frame. And that's so hard for some people to learn, is to take that wide angle lens that we have on life and all the busyness that's going on around us, and then break it down into just one picture of one moment. And you've gotten so good at that, that now it's going the opposite way that you're trying to relearn. And I find that very interesting.
Yeah. You're broadening the frame. You're either broadening the frame or you're shrinking the frame, and you got many different levels of the frame. That's what you're learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we write a poem, we go on stage, we got one picture, and we're doing that picture. But we're not thinking in terms of like five different layers of the picture. We don't have to think in terms of, 2 years down the line or 5 years ago. Unless that's what we're writing about. But when you're writing a novel, you have to take all that into consideration. When you're writing that one chapter, how does this one chapter correlate? How does this one frame correlate with all of the other frames? And is this frame going to be, is I'm going to expand this frame in this chapter, or I'm going to expand it two chapters down? You know, or is it going to be connected to another expanded frame? So that's the little stuff that you have to learn. That's where the discipline comes in at. And so that's the 50% that poets have to learn, is that discipline and that patience for detailing. You know, that's the thing.
Okay, so since we're on this, I'm curious about this. Do you have, when you start writing for like a novel project, do you create for yourself an outline because you have the whole thing in your mind and you try to figure out those little nuances between the different parts? Start with one thing, and then it kind of develops more organically. Are you an outliner,
I'm an outliner because I got a broad imagination, and if I don't have an outline, I'll just be all over the place. So if you have a broad imagination, I think you should have an outline, because all type of stuff are going to pop up. And as long as you have that outline, you're going to stay within those boundaries, because all type of stuff are going to pop up. And whatever you write is going to grow regardless. But if you have that outline, the outline is going to keep it in order and going to keep it polished. You know? So I do start the outline. And then it naturally, it never fails. It starts growing, and you start coming up with ideas. But it's good because you're coming up with ideas within the outline, you know. But that's why I got two books. I started to write one book. But I had it in the outline due to the fact that I had it in the outline. When it started sprouting and becoming its own beast, it was still within the boundaries of what I wanted. But it became its own beast. You know how they say your book started writing itself? It started writing itself. Yes. And I was like, holy shit.
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
That had to be a powerful feeling, the first time you felt that start happening.
Yeah. It's powerful when it started writing itself, and some of your natural thoughts that you thought about and you and my same friends, you wrote something in the second chapter, and you wrote something in the 10th chapter, and then you come back and you read the 5th chapter, and it has connected with both of those chapters, and you didn't even mean it to connect. And certainly you like, holy shit. Yeah, you say,
wow,
whoa. Yeah, and then you might have found some type of, you might have made some type of definition of a word in your own worded way, and then you might do some type of research on the word, and that word that you came up with is so close to a word in the dictionary that has that same meaning, you say, oh, shit. Then it makes you start thinking about, Carl Jung and the subconscious reality, and how it's all connected.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh, shit.
And you say, so this is what they mean by your novel started writing itself. Yeah.
Exactly. You know what, I wouldn't be afraid that, like, I'd start, you know, oh, okay, why did this guy react this way in my book? Well, I think that when he was about 12, something might have happened with regard to this, and then you start, like, developing that story for, like, a flashback, but you don't want to get all tied up in tangential stuff, but, like, you have all these thoughts about the characters that now are people in your head.
And that's heavy. That's heavy when you you have all the thoughts about the people in your head, and you have to keep them all, because they start really, really getting personalities, and it's wild when that start happening. So it's interesting.
Does your outline have more to? Oh, I'm sorry, Cola. I keep stepping on you. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
What, no, I'm just interested.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm interested in, like, does the outline, like, take it for the action of what's happening in the story, or is it more, like, character-centered, where you take your main character and what happens to him or her? I mean, I imagine that with there being a cast of characters, that's hard to balance.
Are you thinking about
the character or the action?
I think it's a little of both. You basically say things. You have to say, all right, you have to say, Susan, I'm going to write, what do I want this book to say? And then you just write exactly what you want, the main theme of the book or the main theme of the chapter. You write that in an outline. And then once you start, once you get that, it's going to grow. But you still that stream. And you're swimming down that same stream, because it's going to grow. It's going to grow on its own. And you're going to be coming up with ideas and, oh, shit, she could be like this. She could be like this. Shit. But as long as since you got the outline, you're still swimming down that same stream, you know. So I think it's a little of both. You have to put both in the outline.
To people like me, too.
I just love
that you're willing to talk about all this, and I'm learning so much just from listening to you.
Yeah, people need to talk about it more, and especially I talk about it with poets more. I'm akin to poets, so I talk about it with poets more. But yeah, it's because a lot of people don't talk about it, the heavy parts of it. I'm just blessed. I got that mind. I can talk about it because I can understand it and hold it all together and everything. So I can talk about it with these. The writing part of
the personal part of it, too.
The writing part of it and the personal part of it, too. That's one thing people don't talk about, the personal part of it. Susan's mind. How is Susan going to be able to deal with that novel, writing that novel, taking care of family, and still working or whatever. But that novel and all the personalities floating around in our mind. That's the part they don't talk about.
Right. Hey, we're kind of getting to the end of our time almost now, and I wanted to make sure that I give you the opportunities to read some more work. So could you?
Hello,
Cola?
Hello, yeah, I'm here.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yeah, I can
hear you. I was wondering if you could read us another piece.
Okay. Yeah, I'll read you another one. This is called The Three Meows. Ba 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 da ba da ba 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 da ba da ba 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 da ba da ba 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 da ba da ba ba ba. He said life is a clitoris. Through our lives we seek the right to be carnivorous for the prize it secretes. I said, nah, life's a politician and wears butt cheeks, who only realizes their position when he's on the toilet seat. She said, nah, life applauds and daps our suffering and grief, claps with a pus that elates. Realities meet. We were talking together, just giving love, thoughtful and clever, nothing's unheard of. He said, heaven is a cougar's vagina that still has the elasticity from its former years, a gripping reminder that brings the eye of my dick to tears. I said, nah, heaven is the land of hope that the wicked hold dear. Without his brand to promote, they wouldn't have a career. She said, nah, heaven is the red shampoo that'll help appease your fears. When blue star ointment won't do as them crabs reappear. Perspectives adhered. We were talking together, just giving love, thoughtful and clever, nothing unheard of. He said, the day is as elegant as coochie hat is not comb. I gladly wear as funk as exotic cologne. I said, nah, the day is as contentious as a student loan. You're going to give it a lot of your free interest before that motherfucker is gone. She said, nah, the day is always a hazard to your health, like wearing white pants when your period's on. If you ain't constantly checking yourself, a cycle of your negligence will be shown. Then she got off his lap. He gave him all $50 and she put her panties back on. They hopped out the car, he cranked up the engine, and we headed home. We were talking together, just giving love, thoughtful and clever, nothing's unheard of. In my cousin's old school coupe and bag of a pub, with three prostitutes, a bottle of liquor and drugs. Thank you.
Interesting piece there, too.
You probably realize I like the grimy side of life. I like doing poems about the grimy side. Yeah, I like. A lot of people don't like looking at the grimy side of life, but I look at the grimy side of life. You know, if someone says, for instance, someone does a poem about police brutality, I'm gonna do a poem about that police officer going to go to his house, see how he's living at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to do a poem about him sitting with his other police officers talking about beating somebody up. You know what I'm saying? I like to go into humanity and see what is lying in the crevices of the soul. So that's what I like to do. Because it's like they always say, reality is more, is deeper, more entertaining, is more scarier than fantasy. So a lot of people watch movies and stuff, but reality is a lot more stranger, more entertaining, more horrible than any movie, you know?
And, you know, I think that because you like the grimy side and because you get into the heads of people, that's something that also maybe helps with writing the book, is that, you know, you already have this cast of characters and you've already got this kind of, like, seedy, grimy thing going on. Nicola, we're running out of time, and if I'm going to have you read us out of the show, I need to have you do that now. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, I'll read you out of the show, and then thank y'all for having me.
You know what? I think that maybe we should talk again when your book comes out. If you give me a call or you message me, I will definitely, definitely put you on the show again. I feel bad that our time is running out, so I just wanted to say that.
No, it was a good time. We talked about, like you said, it was something that people don't get to hear. People talking about the writing process a lot. So it was good that we got to hear it. Yeah.
I loved it.
So, all right, so I will do a poem to send them on home. Hey, baby, a little lady, was the right episode. A little lady, I was 14 years old. She wasn't typical. No, no, no. I said, hey, baby, little lady. She was the color of my grandmother's hot homemade chocolate pudding after she had it for 30 minutes to an hour. Or the shade maybe of her skillet cooked gravy when she lovingly sifted the flour. But this young tender that I had wooed, skin being spindly hued, was just interlude, as she stood before me in the nude, bathing in the warmth of my eyes as I watched over her behind and thighs. I slowly took off my breeches while watching her nipples, wow, blow me kisses, and the sensual trust took my lust from behind golden eyes. Yes, she had made me hard, and it made me reflect upon God, feeling kind of odd, for the mood in this room was both freaky and sacred. Should I get on my knees and pray? Foreplay? I was in awe. I didn't know what to say. It was the first time in my life seeing a woman completely naked. I mean, she took off all her clothes. Hey, I had never seen the sugar walls and clitoris exposed. At 14 years old, shit, I was handily hypnotized. Before her, all the young girls I dated weren't sexually sophisticated. They just laid on the sofa and poured their little panties to the side. But now, I was listening to the stylistics like an old-timer in a den on a mattress next to a recliner drinking pink champagnes with this 16-year-old spellbinder. In that moment in time, there wasn't nothing finer, for I was seeing everything that could be offered through sex to a minor, except the gonorrhea that had infested her vagina.
All right, Cole, thank you again so much for being on the show. I really have enjoyed it, and I hope to have you again soon. In the meantime,
well,
I'm Susan Dobie Chase. You're welcome. This has been Spoken Heard, and until next week, take care of one another.